Bienvenidos a Un Cisne No Tan Negro, el podcast sobre inversión ángel, venture capital, startups e innovación.
Bienvenidos al último episodio de esta segunda temporada de Un Cisne No Tan Negro. Estamos contentos y tristes al mismo tiempo. Mi nombre es Daniel Salvucci, conductor de este podcast y parte del equipo de inversión de Draper Cygnus. Tenemos un invitado particular y es muy especial para este último episodio. La temporada anterior la cerramos con Gabe Turner, que es el director de la Draper Venture Network, esta red de fondos en todo el mundo que tiene Tim Draper y su fondo. Y para continuar con esa tradición, este cierre lo hacemos con Adam Draper, el hijo de Tim Draper, que maneja y lleva adelante un fondo de Venture Capital que se llama Boost VC, que tiene como leva invertir en compañías de ciencia ficción. Eso ya marca muy fuerte el enfoque que tienen de inversión. Y como su fondo, aunque está basado en Silicon Valley, invierte en compañías de todas partes del mundo, tiene una buena parte de ancla en emprendedores de Latinoamérica. Conoce y ha apoyado a mucho del talento que surge de esta región. Por eso tuvimos una espectacular conversación con él, de su pasado, de su presente y de lo que vemos en el futuro. Gracias nuevamente a Amazon Web Services por apoyar esta temporada del podcast y de traernos AWS Activate, este programa para impulsar las startups e inversores de toda Latinoamérica. Y también, obviamente, Brown Rudney, firma legal especializada en Venture Capital y Private Equity, por apoyar y difundir nuestro podcast. Este episodio en particular y la conversación con Adam está en inglés. Así que de vuelta, como lo hice antes, les pido disculpas por adelantado de mi English. Puede no ser el mejor en todos los momentos. Y para los que nos estén escuchando en Spotify o viendo en Instagram que no entiendan en inglés, tenemos la posibilidad de verlo subtitulado en nuestro canal de YouTube. Por favor, búsquennos ahí. Y vayamos directamente a esta espectacular conversación con Adam Draper, la cual disfruté muchísimo hacer. Nos vemos en la próxima temporada. Hey Adam, how are you? Thanks for joining our podcast.
Hey, thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Oh, great. You have the same energy as your father. Always up. I love that.
It's a huge compliment because I think he has 5x the energy of every human being on the planet, but I appreciate it.
Yeah. No. You have the torch. You're going with the family torch. I'm not going to ask a lot about your family because I mean, everyone might talk about that, but we like in this podcast to start knowing. So managers of venture capital funds, but I always like to start when they were not in venture capital, which in your case is difficult because you were raised around venture capital. But I believe that's not your story, your personal story. So
no, that's helpful.
You before
I think that's a great place for me to start anyway, because although my dad, my grandfather, and my great grandfather were all venture capitalists, my family, my dad never wanted us. It wasn't that he didn't want us, but he wanted us to pursue whatever we were passionate about, and he enabled us. So, like when I was in between high school and college. So here, my story starts in Silicon Valley, but then I went to high school on the East Coast at a place called Andover, Phillips Academy. And in between high school and college, I told my parents I wasn't ready for college, university. I wasn't ready for university. They took it really well, actually. I don't know how most parents would react, but my parents didn't answer right then. They waited. And then they came to me and they said, okay, we hear you, but you have to do something. and so I came up with a plan to train and play professional tennis. So I was always a pretty good tennis player, and in between high school and college. And so I was 17, 18, and I went to Australia and I played tennis for 8 months, 7 hours a day in Australia. I learned a lot. I actually think that 17 to 18, I'd say 16 to 18 are these crucial years for like humans to get to know themselves. And it was a really key year for me personally to like develop my own thought processes on things and really commit to one thing. Now, today, I am not a professional tennis player, although I wish, you know, I think if you're competitive, you always still have this little piece of your brain that's always like, well, yeah, you could be, you know, if you just did it. But I'm not. And I am super competitive. And but after that, I went to UCLA and I ended up as an English major. I speak that language. I also write more than most in my career, in my profession, because at the end of the day, there's a funny thing that someone once said on Twitter that was, we are media company, venture capital, we're media companies backed by assets. And because you have to figure out where distribution is, you have to figure out where you have to figure out how to communicate, how to find. Our job's super easy, right? Like, we have to deploy capital into the best companies. That's it. Like, at the end of the day, that's what we're trying to do.
Sounds simple.
It sounds simple. Sorry, it's not actually easy. In reality, how it works though is basically like it's become a very competitive asset class.
Yep.
You have to own what you own. You have to figure out where your knowledge base is against other people's, your industry expertise, what you do well. I'm wandering a little bit, but after college, I started a company, and that company was a company called, I had a couple of jobs along the way. I was a tennis coach, a telemarketer three times. What telemarketer is like the people who, you know,
We know. America has a lot of telemarketing for the world. Yeah.
So it's actually a great job to have had, because I am very comfortable picking up a phone and calling people and bothering them. And it served me well. Like, basically that's what fundraising is at the end of the day. It's trying to create a relationship on the phone. And now that we've all gone remote, it's even more valuable. And then I started a company. It was called Expert Financial, and we were a secondary market for private securities. I co-founded it with another guy named Thomas Foley. And after 4.5 years, we ended up selling it we lost money, and we sold it to a company called Venovate. But during that time frame, I learned all the mistakes I made. Like, I cataloged all these sort of small learnings, and I found I really liked mentoring companies, and I really enjoyed helping them not make the same mistakes I did, and one-to-one building a relationship with them. And so just after that, I ended up launching a crowdfunding website to help startups fundraise. And I started to come up with this idea that I would eventually start to invest in companies. And so I did. I actually invested in a couple of companies during that time frame. We at Boost Funder, I also found that there was this discrepancy. It was a crowdfunding for equity website, but there was a distance between what investors needed to invest informationally and what founders thought the investors needed to invest. And so I was like, really, this is an in-person problem I can solve. So I did the thing that doesn't scale, and I launched an accelerator so that I could bring all those founders together. And we actually, before the pandemic hit, we provided housing, office space, and we were an accelerator. We focused primarily on Bitcoin related startups at the beginning. And over the last 8 years, we've really just evolved the model. Like, we started it by investing $15,000 for 7%. And then we slowly grew our fund size to be able to invest more because the founders needed more money. And up till today, now, especially what we call sci-fi founders, where they're working on something that's deeply technical, they need more time to figure that out. Yeah. And that requires more money. And so we now invest $500,000 for 15%. We run the companies through a program twice a year, 10 companies twice a year. And we invest from all over the world. We've been doing that since the beginning. 30% of our companies are international. We pride ourselves on sort of just, we believe entrepreneurial talent and innovations come from everywhere. But we do think having a Silicon Valley-based network does help get money if you need money. And sci-fi companies, eventually, they need money.
Totally. I think in a few things what you have said. It seems like you did a very introspective time when you were 60s, in your 16s, sorry. But then after you built your company again, so you figured out again where you were best. And then you say, well, I can do best here with the accelerator, and then transforming it into a venture capital firm and expanding the horizon of Boost also. So you kind of repeated the process.
You know, it's super interesting. I think that's incredibly insightful because one thing is, I think my 12-year-old self would be very proud of me today. So, you know, I mean, here, I'll turn off this video for a sec. Not my virtual desktop so you can see behind me, but virtual desktop. So back there are all my comic books. So these are all my comics. and I have a couple rare ones, which because I'm older, I can afford. And then, but all of the, this is like my life's supply of comic books. I still collect trading cards.
And this is important. You're a Marvel guy or a DC comic guy?
This is, okay, there's an amazing book. It's called Slugfest. And it's about the business side. I actually loved it because it was about the business side of the Marvel versus DC eras. In general, I am Marvel. So, and it's because Spider-Man I grew up on, I would say.
X-Men. I was a fan of X-Men when I was growing
up. I mean, those are the two like gateways, right? And then, but recently I've been reading this. We don't need to get too much into comic books, but it's a Image Comics comic book, and it's called Invincible, and it's like if the son of it's like if Superman had a son sort of story, but with a really great world builder. So you start to see all these different superheroes, and right. Like it's really cool. I think your comment though is really great on the. I slowly built up where I felt I would be most valuable over time. And I started to feed that algorithm and test things. I'm constantly still like testing where I'm helpful, where I'm not, and challenging myself, making sure my companies understand where I think I'm helpful and where, like, I think advice, anyone can give advice, right? But there's specific places where people should take my advice and specific places where they should not. and then it's about just like me being interested in working with people. I think venture capital, sometimes we mislead things by leading with the idea that the company is about. So we always say like, you know, it's, we lead
what
with
do and the market and blah, but it's all about people.
And it's a disservice to the founder who is, you know, been working in this industry for 10 years and I want to get better at start leading with the founder and then saying what they're doing, right? It'll make it more reminding people that we're not, Coinbase wasn't.
It wasn't Coinbase.
Brian Armstrong. Right, and, I should probably mention, you know, I have been relatively successful with seed investments. I was the first crypto accelerator to focus on crypto. We've launched some of the biggest like tokens across the board. And we just pride ourselves on sort of finding where the highest density of smart people are tinkering with hard technology. Because we think that's where breakthroughs happen. And that's where I want to be. I want to be where there's just a high density of really, really intelligent people working. And sort of like Xerox Labs, but on the internet.
Yeah, and distributed.
Yeah, it's distributed Xerox Labs. Like, and they're all conjoined through... We work in these technologies where someone's identity is affiliated with the technology. Like, if you're a crypto person... That's a thing. Like you can be a crypto person. Crypto is like the technology. It's like the blockchain. It's like saying I'm a blockchain person or a Bitcoin person. And like all those things are different identities, which is crazy. Like we're aligning ourselves with technology now. And then virtual reality are virtual reality people. The space people are space people. The exoskeletons are exoskeleton people. Like they're grouping themselves up.
Yeah, like supranations of people around the world anchoring on some kind of passion. I think that's what
I'm going to use that in my pitching. When I'm pitching, I'm going to say supranations of these in like these people who identify with the, it's almost like they've created their own nationalism.
Nation.
Yeah. Supranations of tech.
Well, we are both Boost VC and Draper Sinus. We are all investing in that specific area. Not every venture fund is looking at that way, the investment landscape, which is not good or bad. There are different theses. But talking about that, we can relate. We do invest in very, very early stage, pre-seed to Series A. So that anchor on the people that are building the company is more important than ever. And talking about that, how do you see the world in terms of source of talent? And especially in Latin America, this podcast might be especially here in Latin America. So your experience around that.
I mean, but we have had great success in Argentina and Buenos Aires. We've backed companies from Brazil, one of them's in, I want to say Paraguay instead of Uruguay. Yeah, it's either Paraguay or Uruguay. It's not the landlocked one. Which one's landlocked? Uruguay, I think.
Uruguay. So landlocked? No.
Uruguay is in the middle of...
of the earth.
Europe.
On the land. Yeah. Okay, no, that's Paraguay. Uruguay is on the coast.
Got it. Okay, so they're so in
from
Uruguay.
From Uruguay.
They're in Uruguay. In Chile, and so I've actually invested in country-wise, probably about five or six different South American countries. Our thesis is that talent, like entrepreneurs, are everywhere. They're constantly at the battle of, the entrepreneurs are the ones. They're the ones who see the wedge between regulation and society, and they see what works and what doesn't. And like regulation is this, it's innovation against regulation, but I actually see a value in regulation. I think a lot of things are overregulated right now, and that's where entrepreneurs are best. They thrive where we all see one set of rules. They see where they can build something amazing, and technology is the best way to show us the way forward. So
paraphrasing, regulation creates opportunities.
It's almost like regulation creates all of the opportunities for innovation. If you think about it on some level, like that's all SpaceX did with SpaceX. Like they didn't fundamentally change the technology other than the, reverse landing and making it look cool. They figured out a better business model where they were able to launch into space for cheaper. So that is one thing they did. And they realized that that aligned with all the governments. And so now all the governments are allowing them to do this. But that was the sneak attack, was aligning the incentive of all the governments to make sure that we could make... when you thought about a rocket scientist 20 years ago, you pictured a 60-year-old doing math.
Yeah.
Okay?
In the lab... and dark lab.
Lab and like weird boards all over the place.
With a lot of mathematical.
Just arguing and debating math.
Yeah.
Today, you picture a 35-year-old who has 10 years of experience now building spaceships that have actually gone into space. And that is what the beauty of Elon Musk is. He gets the most ambitious, innovative people working on the hardest problems. And
he just presented the Neuralink. The whole presentation, what really struck me, is it was just a recruiting presentation. It was just to recruit people.
Completely.
That's what was all about. About that presentation is come join us, come work for us.
It's so all startups are, it's an organism. If you are lucky enough and cursed enough at the same time, where you have a mission in life, right?
Yeah.
You have cursed yourself with this mission. This is the only thing that you can obsess about doing. This is all you want to do with your 50 years, or like 70 years. Really what a company is, an organization is a, it's you convincing all the smartest people to be on your mission and to be solving your problem. And that is what Elon Musk is better at than everyone else on the planet, is getting the smartest people jazzed up. If it was, NASA's been trying to recruit the smartest people and the like youth into their organization for ages, but they bureaucratically like struck everyone down. He was brave enough to go forward and just be like, hey, we can fail. We're going to fail a lot. Like, do you know how hard it is to fight gravity? Like, we're going to fail a lot, but at the end of the day, we're going to innovate and we're going to find ways in which we innovate.
I think that's one of the things that are great about Boost is that you define it as a venture fund that invests in sci-fi companies, like science fiction companies. So I think that's a very good boiler of the concept of what we are doing, actually.
It helps. So it helps founders think about, are we a sci-fi company? Like, and then it makes them think, yeah, we are. And most technologies today are pretty sci-fi. Like, I don't know about you, but almost everything that's being built today, like in the next 5 years, is like,
yeah,
it's global. It's like rockets. It's the, you know,
I think we have a beauty and your podcast, our podcast and what we write, it, we need to get more people to see what we are seeing. We are in the front line of that. That's a privilege. And
I always forget that. I always forget that I see the world. I get all these data points at the earliest, weirdest, coolest technologies and with these amazing people who are rationally like, we just backed a company. It's a tugboat in space, right? Like they're trying to build the railroad tracks for space so that you can move laterally. Most things make you move out, right? And this thing's making you move laterally. And the craziest thing is that I get to have conversations about how that's like a normal conversation for me, where like these two people, they worked at Blue Origin for, you know, 5 years. They're fantastic developers, engineers. They've done all this great stuff. And they're basically like, so we're having this problem. And it's like, you know, in space, docking is a difficult thing to do. And like, because gravity's not there. So how do you dock? Like, what's the material we use? And so I get to have these crazy cool conversations around, and I always forget that like, other people are going to start having those conversations in like 3 years, right? Yeah. Like that's what I forget. I forget about that. That's the thing I forget.
It's powerful. It's really powerful. And that can with people understanding about also venture capital, not only as an asset for investment, also an impact vehicle.
I think all things are this nature of impact investment is sort of a fascinating. Like at the end of the day, they still care about money, right? Like I believe money is good.
Which okay? is so great.
That's money is great. It makes impact. Like at the end of the day, if you're making more of it, but obviously I think there's a trade-off. It's like, do I think you need to back the next cigarette company? I don't think that's as good for the future of humanity as, you know, scanning the ocean, making sure that we know what this planet is all about. But I think there's a profitable way to do both. And I think that's what the difference between impact and not is. People are saying, I want my money to go towards this general direction, not, you know, missiles and guns and tobacco.
Totally.
And I have no problem with, you know, I think both are sort of, there's innovations that will be brought from both sides, but you know, I'm not going to back a tobacco company. I wouldn't do that. So it's like one of those, it's neither good nor bad. It is.
No, at all. It is, exactly. And we're free, so we can choose.
Exactly.
I I have a question that I always ask to managers of venture capital firms is what, because we have already go through your past, your present with Boost, maybe something else you want, you want to share about Boost and what you're doing now, that would be great. And then I have a few questions for the future.
Okay, great.
Let's put it there.
Yeah, so past and present with Boost, it's sort of a year ago, we made this big transition for us. It's not brand wise or anything wise. It's just, we decided that startups needed more money from an accelerator. And so we started investing $500,000. It gave the companies more time, and we're learning more about that customer now and about how we can provide them a better service. So instead of us trying to constantly translate how investors think, we're finding that most of the conversations we're having are around, how sales works, like, which is cool. Like, suddenly our companies have a longer time frame to actually think about their customer, not just fundraising, which investors aren't customers as much as we'd love to consider ourselves customers. And so I think that that's been the transition for us. Was there are these people who are, they all have this spark in them and the people who are going to create the largest opportunities who have that spark. I think everyone has this spark, but the ones who have the spark and are like optimistic, like self-confident, energetic, committed individuals, the highest percentage of those people, the highest density of those people are working in these technologies that I would consider sci-fi. They're working in these, what we call super nations of tech. Like, they're working in, it's not specific companies, but they're all tinkering in crypto. They're all tinkering in space. And so finding these identity filled places is what, and bringing them all together under one hood is what Boost VC is trying to do. So that those people can all share knowledge amongst themselves. That's where value is spreading. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to bring together all of those sci-fi people who are building in these separate nation states together to believing that we will move faster and farther as humans if they are sharing information amongst themselves, basically.
I totally agree with you. We have just had a breakthrough the other day talking in the investment team, and that it's all connected, actually, because biotech, space, nanotech, robotics, AI, VR, and crypto, they're not like verticals. They're all connected. It's the new framework for the new future. You need crypto for those decentralized bio, space, manufacturing, etc.
You need
the governance and the money for
it. Yeah, like we have this, we're very fortunate to live in a time when we have frictionless communication globally, right? Like, that, you can either look at that as like, this is the greatest thing on the planet, or it's the worst, one or the other. And like, I'd say media, we haven't adjusted to how media impacts our brains in this scaled society. And that's been a big problem in the last 6 months, especially. But I do think that is a net good for the world. And that is driving so much just amazing innovation. Suddenly, school isn't school anymore. It's like, I want to learn. If you want to learn about space, there are YouTube videos that are probably better than a Harvard education in space, right? Like,
you might have the Harvard guy also in an Instagram account doing like.
And so we can be inspired by so much now. And so now it's not about inspiration. It's not about, it's about focus. It's about like making sure that you have chosen the thing you want to be building, because equal access to information is almost a thing. It's not completely a thing. And
no, but that's the ultimate goal. So everyone can be in the same, at least in the same or similar position. Yeah.
Yeah. And so what you're talking about is, it's completely, I'm trying to figure out, I think we're on spaceship Earth, right? Like, we're humans on a rock hurtling through space.
And it's a good way to see it. Yeah.
Yeah. And in order to scale, at one point we had to divide ourselves and say, my way is better, your way is worse. My way is better, your way is worse. And so we eventually drew all these lines on our planet. And the ocean divides them all, right? But now with communication, we empathize with each other. Like, I empathize with Argentina. I empathize. You can't villainize people as easily anymore.
I think we still didn't adjust, as you said, to that new paradigm, because there's still a lot of
And it's philosophical walls, right? Like, it's this person's evil. Actually, you're right. We can vilify actually at scale. I guess, you know, if I'm being more.
But we shouldn't, because there's no need. Actually, now.
Because it's like we should empathize. Sorry, I should say we should empathize.
No, we should empathize. Right? We shouldn't discuss or. Antagonize. There's no need to antagonize, actually.
Each country and say, like, people are trying their best. Like, what I've learned over especially the last 6 months is, like, everyone's trying their best. The government officials, they're not in the wrong. They're trying to give us the best option based off of their view of the world. I might disagree with their view of the world, but, like, they're trying their best. I want the world to be one planet so that we can move on and learn more about our planet, learn more about our brains, and learn more. I think venture capital is really about reducing the friction between the next discovery. And if I am lucky enough to be affiliated with one of the major, like I would love to be one of the people who was affiliated with one of the changes that's like, the world is not flat, right?
Totally.
And like, that would be one of the most astronomical things that I could be a part of. And I think that's what really I'm driving towards every day. I'm doing little things every day that I believe get me closer and closer to finding and being a part of one of those breakthroughs. That's like a full, Peter Thiel called them secrets, but like, that's what I want to be a part of. I want to be a part of the next 5,000 secrets that are discovered.
It's a great way to put it. I just wanted in on record to recommend a podcast in a conversation you did with Arvind Gupta.
Oh, yeah.
That was so fun. Funny, but very insightful conversation about some of the things we are tapping very lightly. And you, I don't know if you coined it, but that, or Arvind, or you take from someone about that conscious capital.
Conscious, that was really great.
Really great. And I think it represents a lot of all of the guys we talk every day.
Yeah, conscious capitalism. This concept of like being more considerate about where that money goes is that sort of division. And I shouldn't say tobacco is bad, but it's, I would say discovering more about the ocean is good. Like, yeah,
you gave me the hint, because I was to talk about the future with someone that invests in sci-fi companies is kind of difficult. The question is obvious, but why don't you tell everyone a little more about your obsession with the ocean and the opportunities the ocean? I found that great.
You know, it's really funny, the things that I get obsessed over. And I'd say it's one of my curses, is this. So Bitcoin, I always look for like the philosophical battle. So Bitcoin, when I brought it up to my grandfather for the first time, he said, don't do that. I said, but what if the only way to get through to him was basically saying, and you know, like, he's been in venture capital. He's seen societal shifts. He's seen all this stuff. And he's still like, in order to have a currency, you need the government, you need trust, and you need, and like every person who was around his age said the exact same thing to me. They listed off the three things. They were well-educated on the topic.
They still trusted government. That's the thing.
And so the only way to get through was saying, all we're talking about, all this technology is talking about is, could there be a better way than the Fed? And that started to drip through, where it's, could there be a better way? Could there be a different way? Maybe not even better, but different. And like, they saw, you know, the gold standard shift to dollars, shift to credit cards, shift to like all this stuff for payment. And so I like that was, and so one of the things is like, I try to find where that resistance barrier is for, it could be generational resistance. It could be philosophical resistance. And ocean at the end of the day for me was, I actually originally didn't think climate change was a thing. And I kept thinking, you know, it's mediaized, it's like they're just trying to like create, it was too politicized. It was too, I'm good because of climate change, I'm bad not because Al Gore or whatever. But at one point I said this and I said that, and I actually believed it. I did believe that climate change was not a thing. And I ended up having a 50-minute argument with one of my best friends. And the 50-minute argument, and I think that time frame changes on every time I tell the story, but it's about 40 to 50-minute argument.
Okay.
And what I realized after 50 minutes was he knew nothing about climate change. I knew nothing about climate change. But we argued about it for 50 minutes. So there's this friction point. There's this philosophical friction between us. And I believe that those friction points all have opportunity. And so I was like, okay, I'm going to get to the bottom of it. I'm actually going to spend time to figure out where I feel about climate change. So at the end of the day, I don't need to bore you with all the, like there, it is politicized a little too much. And it is like, there is a lot of that even in books. But at the end of the day, the question I had to ask myself after researching was, do I believe? Because the way that people track climate change, I don't believe is the best way to do it. And the way that they throw data around is not the right data. However, at the end of it, I had to ask myself, do I believe after about a year? And the answer was yes, I believed. Even after knowing I didn't believe the data and knowing I didn't believe, I believed that the climate of the world was changing and humans were causing it. And so if I believe that, I should do something about it, right? Because that could be the biggest opportunity anyone's ever had.
No, you know you can't do nothing because you know that's the problem.
Yeah, you know then. Like, yeah. I need to at least think about how I could impact that, right? And I was like, okay, well, if I believe that, then, and the only thing I learned, well, I learned some things, but the main thing was the ocean is the biggest regulator of the Earth's temperature. But once you start digging into the ocean, and so my thesis is very simple. The ocean's sick, it's throwing the whole world out of whack. That's it. So let's figure out how to clean up the ocean. We'll be fine. Like the climate change won't be a conversation anymore. These fires that we're having in California won't be an issue, like all that stuff. It, easier said than done, but like that's my thesis. But when you dig into the ocean, you realize we've drawn lines around the ocean and it's caused pollution. It's caused this stuff where it's like no one wants to take care of the ocean because no one owns it. It's not United States property. We'll clean up to 3 miles out. Federally, we'll clean up to 20 miles. Like, we're not going to clean past, though. We're going to leave that for, like, the commons. And that's why, you know, there's all this, like, fishing gear. There's all the, like, over whaling population. There's the, like, there's all this stuff happening out in that water because no one's policing it. Not policing, but no one owns it. And so I've been very open about saying, and ocean people hate it. This is where I also know I might be onto something, is, like, ocean people hate this. I say, I own the ocean now, and they dislike it because they think of the ocean as this net, this like just gift to humanity. And I'm thinking like the only way we take care of it is if we own it. The impact that these people are doing by cleaning up beaches is like zero. Like it's marginal. I shouldn't say zero. The heart's in the right place, but you need heart, hands, and brain to all work together. And that's what incentives are. And so we need to figure out how to align incentives and owning the ocean is this, it's this thing where someone needs to wrap their head around it. And I love it. It's one of my favorite things I say now is like, I own the ocean. They go, you can't own the ocean. I'm like, well, no one else does. So I might as well do it. So I'm going to do something about it. And by starting to say stuff like that, you just see reactions, you see like, and 6 months later, a year later, I get emails from people saying like, hey, it sort of makes sense what you're saying. And I'm like, it does? Like that, I don't, like, you know, who knows? And they start to think differently. It takes time to absorb. It takes time to care. It takes time to do all that stuff. And they need to come up with it on their own. And so meanwhile, I want I want to pull in Elon Musk. I want to get the smartest people working on the hardest problems in the ocean. We're going to space, and I love space, and I'm still going to continue to go to space because I think that's a trillion-dollar market. But I think the ocean's a trillion-dollar market too.
And so it's right here.
And it's right here. We don't need to fight gravity. In fact, we work with it. Like, we drop things into it.
I heard you say something in another podcast, that I think makes a lot of sense, but I let you say it. The problem is communications. We do have internet in space. We do not have Wi-Fi on the ocean.
Under the water.
Yeah. If someone is hearing us and has some technology going down, just send it back. Send it here, because that would change the thing.
It's so cool. So there's a lot of new technologies. So people have tried to solve the ocean to space problem. So communication amongst all the layers. And it's possible, basically, is what they've learned. Like, they can, but it's not good. And like, we do need to solve that. But I also learned that, what did they do? There's a really cool company that they realized that when it rained, signals between two of their on land towers would be slower. So communication was slower, and it was by a margin. So they were able to say when it's raining in an area based off of like the drop on the
communications line. Yeah.
And that's crazy. Like, knowing that stuff is like crazy to me, where it probably moves faster when it's super hot too, but I don't know if that's true. But the, I don't know. I'm basically, ocean is already a trillion-dollar market. Shipping and logistics, aquaculture, and then R&D is a big piece of what's happening in the ocean. And he or she who owns the ocean owns the world has been a theme of the last every war ever. And, and so we, for some reason, just ignore it because it's unfathomably large. But what if you could divide it? What if I could own a piece of the ocean? And it was logical, the piece I owned. That's basically, I'm an ocean advocate. I'm an impact investor, but I'm fighting for money. Like, at the end of the day, I think people do things for money. Money is good. I'm going to make money. Like,
put in the right directions, make great things.
And it makes the world move faster. I want, if I could like choose where my tax dollars went and it was like towards R&D, I would be like, okay, 100%. Take more of my money. Like, if I could choose that, like, 50% of my money went to a very specific department, and it's like, I know who's managing the money there, I'd be like, take it.
The great about crypto is that that's possible. The technology is there. We just have to use it.
We can do that. And that is going to happen.
It is happening, actually. I know, but in small places, relatively small places to the other. But
it's tiny. My thesis.
It's tiny until it's huge.
It's tiny until it's huge. That's, by the way, until I had been a part of what a fast scaling growth company was, you don't really understand exponential growth. It's very difficult to like fathom how fast that grows, right? Like, it's
interesting weird. That because I actually, that's how nature works, but we can't grasp that.
And yeah.
I am an electronic engineer, so I know about exponential. I studied exponential, and it's physics. But for some reason, we can't actually...
You can't feel it until you've like...
Been until you do. And until when you do, it changes.
And then it's like, oh... And it's because we're shielded by so much doubt of that being possible, especially in venture capital. Basically... We pretend that we're all for things, but like everyone still has like a major doubt. Even in the deals that you're doing, you're figuring out how it won't work so that you can help them work. And the And so that you keep giving hope to them all the time. And you're like, these are the problems. These are, but at the end of the day, if they deliver a value to a customer, exponential growth is possible. And like, it happens. And it's the craziest thing ever. Like, I would have loved to have been on the Facebook rocket ship, just being like, holy crap. Like, that would have been amazing to watch. Or even, you know, my dad, he always talked about the network effects of Skype and Hotmail. And like, the only thing I've ever really experienced it on, and I've been a part of a bunch of companies that are worth a lot, but Coinbase is something that is, yes, like network effect, communication effect. And it's about verbal virality. Like, everyone thinks growth hacking, I don't believe is a thing. So I don't believe growth hacking is a real tangible thing. And I believe that it does a disservice to sort of marketing in general, which is really about creating the best communication of what your product does to the public. Because it's a hack. They're saying like, oh, it's a short-term hack, like to figure out how to get more people in, and it's hacking the funnel up front. But if you're not solving it, you have so much churn that it destroys your company. No, you lose trust. But if you deliver an amazing product, people want to talk about it. And that's why people always say, my dad always says, make your customers your salespeople. First off, it saves money if you can get them to be your salespeople, so you don't need to hire as many. But if you can get them to talk about you because you delivered such a good product, you scale. And that's what exponential growth is one person saying it to another person. That's it.
Yes. Great. Very, very, very good definition. I really liked it. Adam, I don't want to take you more time. I have like a list, long list of things I would love to discuss and talk and share. But let's maybe wrap up with anything you want to say. You have not so very big, but I hope it grow audience of investor and startup from Latin America.
So a lot of people think, one thing I will like leave people with is for audience of, if I'm thinking other investors, other entrepreneurs in a different location, it's two different things. And I'll figure out what the second one is while I'm saying the first one. The first one is advice. So if you're a founder and you're listening to this, choose who you listen to, like, wisely, because not everyone's good at everything. And if they're giving you advice that's very focused around your industry, but you know the industry, then like, you should be listening to them for something else. I have an expertise that happens to be very good at a very specific point in time during a company's life cycle, but I am not good beyond that. Scaling an organization, I'm actually not as good at as like getting from zero to one, and like knowing how to coach people through that process. The other thing is knowing where the market is today is as valuable as thinking about where the market's going to be. And that's something I've had to learn essentially the hard way. Knowing that the market is a certain size today, and how big that is, and if you could build a $1 billion company in that today, is important. I'm willing to take the risk actually early. I talk about future $1 trillion markets, but for a founder, just to make it easier on yourselves, think about where the market is and then also how it will get to being a $1 trillion market. So, and think in terms of trillion. Don't think in terms of billion. Think in terms of trillion, because that's how big markets are getting. And then my third thing is, I think the most important thing you can do with your money is bet on yourself and on humans who have that spark and who are going to create change. You know, everyone, when I say that spark, like, everyone has a couple people in their lives that they're like, that person has it, you know, like, everyone has this thing where they have so much pent up energy that they can't not do things. And those people are worth money. That always. I don't know. You know, sometimes they're a little too, they need to be authentic. Authenticity is something that is difficult to train. Authentic, committed, energetic humans. So like, those are sort of my three like pieces. I feel that I've found a place where I'm best used for humanity for now. If you are a founder and you, I would love to invest in anyone who has those pieces of wants to think about trillion-dollar markets and has that energy. Feel free to apply or email me, adam@boost.vc. I'd love to talk.
Great, Adam. Thank you. Really, I really appreciate for your time and your conversation. You are going to close our podcast, so this is our final interview of this season. So I'm very, very, very grateful for your time. And well, we can see in the future in the field investing in great entrepreneurs.
I hope we get to work together, because I love what you're doing. I love how you're thinking about it. And I think South America has so much growth ahead that it's time to create and own markets, like own the thing, you know. Don't look at, also everyone looks at the United States as if we are the like way you should build things, or like we're the peak of what you could hit. Don't think that's a brain limiting thing. You can win the United States. You can beat the US at everything. And so we need to create better, more competitive markets. That's going to be better for humans. All of those things. Build the biggest company you can and build it natively to Latin America. That's what I would do.
Thanks a lot, Adam. That's the final message.
Great to talk.